Hey, you mob. I'm Candice LeRae from the Merindas, and you're listening to Noongar Radio.
Yeah, what a fantastic band they are as well, the Merindas. And welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight here on 6NME. Noongar Radio, Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. I hope you can stay tuned. Got a good program coming your way. Lots of interesting stuff to bring you up to date with. Going to be finding out all about a project called Indigenous Legal Needs when we chat with my first guest shortly on the program from the Cairns Institute at the James Cook University in beautiful Cairns. So do stay tuned. Fiona Allison will be letting us know all about a whole lot of research that's been happening and a trip that's happening to Roebourne and other places in Western Australia during September. We also chat with Privacy Commissioner Timothy Pilgrim. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner has launched a new series of videos about common privacy issues for individuals. One was launched on Monday of this week. The other is to be launched tomorrow. You can check them out on their website. We'll find out more about that when we speak with Timothy Pilgrim, the Privacy Commissioner, this morning on the program as well. Also chatting with Larissa Berendt about the Bowerville Murders Inquiry and the possibility of a new trial before the screening of Innocence Betrayed, which is going to be on NITV tonight. So do stay tuned for that. Larissa was a lawyer. She wrote, directed and narrated this documentary and is the former lawyer for this case. So a fascinating and very, very tragic story of the Bowerville Murders Inquiry. Do stay tuned. I'm sure you're going to find that very, very interesting. Let's kick off Law Matters for another fortnight here on Noongar Radio. Great to have your company here on the Law Matters program, brought to you every fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour, and got a really interesting program coming your way. I hope you can stay tuned. We're going to cruise off to Cairns now in beautiful far north Queensland and chat with Fiona Allison, who is a senior research officer at the Cairns Institute and Faculty of Business, Law and Creative Arts at James Cook Uni. Welcome to the program from Cairns. Fiona, how are you going?
I'm good, thanks Jodie. Thanks for having me on board. Yeah, it is very beautiful over here at the moment, although it's raining a little bit, but we're still not wearing jumpers, and so that's always a nice thing.
I've only been to Cairns once, but it is just absolutely gorgeous.
It is so beautiful, and the good thing is that the nature's so close to the city, so it doesn't take long to get out and enjoy it. So yeah.
Okay, stop it. We're getting envious. All right. Now, listen, we're going to chat with you today on our Law Matters project about a very important project called the Indigenous Legal Needs Project. Maybe give us a bit of background to what it is and who's been working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's myself and a couple of other researchers working on the project directly. As you said, we're based over at James Cook University in Cairns. But we're actually also partnered with you guys, and Aboriginal Legal Services are pretty much nationally, so in Victoria, the NT, Queensland and WA, obviously, and Legal Aid Commissions and some Aboriginal Family Violence Prevention Legal Services. The project's been running it's probably close to 3.5 years now, and in total it'll be a 4-year project. And as I said, it's a national project travelling to 4 jurisdictions, but it actually started off in New South Wales with the Legal Aid Commission. The idea for the start-up of the project was that the Legal Aid Commission felt that Aboriginal people weren't coming to see them for much other than criminal law matters, and they thought that there was probably a lot of need in the community in relation to other problems, such as people getting kicked out of their house, kids getting taken away by government, debt, so, you know, having to pay phone bills and being chased by a debt collector when you can't, discrimination, all those sorts of issues were out in the community, but people weren't necessarily getting help from lawyers in relation to these matters, and perhaps weren't even dealing with them in the best way possible, even without lawyers. So the idea was to go out and try to get some information directly from communities about what they thought they might need some more help with, what sort of issues were coming up, and how best legal services in particular could help them with these sorts of problems. So We've been travelling around talking to people in communities, and there's been 32 in total, and actually we're just about to come over to Narrogin and Roebourne, which will be our final two communities for the project and also for WA.
You said that the project's been going for about 3.5 years, Fiona,
yes.
And it'll be completed about 4 years. Started in New South Wales, where else have you been before you'll head over here in September?
Well, look, I think what I was saying is the other jurisdictions that we've been to are Victoria, the NT and Queensland, and we've actually finished all our travels in those communities, in those states and territories. And in WA, we've already been to 6 communities. And I can tell you what they are if you'd like to know.
Yeah, definitely.
Geraldton, Perth, Fitzroy Crossing, Balgo, Wyndham and Laverton. So as you can see, and this is what's happened in all of the states and territories that we've been to, we really try to we work with our partners, our legal service partners, to try to pick communities that are really quite remote. So we've been to a very small community, the NT, called Alpurrurulam, or otherwise known as Lake Nash, to more central communities such as Brisbane or Perth. And obviously, well, the issues are different in some respects depending on where you go, but what we're finding is there's also a lot of similarity. So as I said, Narrogin and Roebourne will be our final two. So it's a bit of a significant trip for us.
I'm talking with Fiona Allison about the Indigenous Legal Needs Project. Fiona, why was it felt that there was a need to embark on such a project 3.5 years ago?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. And I think what the Legal Aid Commission in New South Wales was saying is probably proving to be true, that although Aboriginal people might be connected to the legal service and, to legal services and to the law, I'm about to start coughing, and may have some information about the law in relation to criminal law matters, the sense was, and I think, as I said, this is proving to be the case, that there's so much else going on in people's lives. They have serious consequences for them, but they don't necessarily see them as being legal issues for which they could get legal help, in relation to which they have legal rights. And these are things that touch their lives on a daily basis. So, for instance, as I said, issues relating to housing or child protection or debt. I think the idea has been really to go and gather information and see what is actually out there, so that organisations such as the Aboriginal Legal Service can use that information to then try to call for better funding so that they can start meeting need in these other areas. At the moment, they're fairly flat out trying to meet need in relation to criminal law matters because of the over-representation of Aboriginal people within the criminal justice system. And I think the other issue is that we found is quite interesting is there's a lot of talk about offending and about the criminal justice system in relation to Aboriginal people, but what we're finding is that a lot of these issues that we're looking at that aren't criminal, so civil and family law issues, if they're left unaddressed, they can actually become a criminal law matter. And we're seeing that particularly in areas like discrimination. So what we're hearing is that that's just such a frequent and, such a terrible occurrence that Aboriginal people are dealing with all the time, that at one point they might just lose it and get in a direct confrontation with someone that says something racist towards them, and then they end up with assault charges. And it happens in other areas as well. And I guess the other thing is there's all this talk about these problems as social problems, so things like homelessness, but at some point there may actually have been a legal issue in there, such as someone getting evicted, and if people were better able to or had more knowledge and more help around trying to deal with these problems at the start, you start trying to address these broader social problems as well, offending, but also some of these other issues like unemployment and, kids not showing up at school, etc. So that's the idea of it. And what we'll do is, what we have done in the other jurisdictions and we'll do in WA is to write it all up into a fairly meaty report. But what we try to do is to feed it back to communities by producing a short animated film, which actually just sets out a little bit about what sort of things we've been looking at, where people can get help, and also what people have said to us are the main issues. So we're pretty keen to to keep it at a community level so that people know what's going on with the study as well.
It's interesting, Fiona, because I know at the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, I mean, we obviously provide services in the area of criminal law, but also family law and civil and human rights and protecting and advocating for human rights for our mob. But quite often people do think of an Aboriginal Legal Services as just offering that support in a criminal capacity, but it is a lot broader, and it's interesting some of the areas that you touched on. While they may be separate from that area, they could end up in that jurisdiction just due to not being dealt with, like discrimination and, you know, complaints and harassment and a whole lot of areas, hey?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, child removal is a really good example. You know, you take kids out of family and put them into care and, I don't know, all sorts of things can go wrong, and life spirals out of control, and offending is sometimes a consequence of that. So but we've been really, we've had, it's been really fantastic to have the ALS travelling around with us in WA. So as you know, that's what's been happening. And I think when we get out into communities and people start seeing that connection that can be made between some of these issues that they didn't even think were a legal issue and the legal service, we're hoping that people will link up more and get some help for these issues. And I guess the ideal situation is that people can actually deal with them on their own without legal help. But what we're hearing is a lot of people would like to get some assistance around these issues rather than tackle them themselves. So it's quite hard to deal directly with Homes West or, you know, directly with Centrelink. If you've got a problem, it can help to have a legal advisor on board to help you with it.
I'm chatting with Fiona Allison, who is a Senior Research Officer at the Cairns Institute, and we're talking about the Indigenous Legal Needs Project that's been occurring around the country for the last few years. Still visits happening for Narrogin and Roebourne, the last of the communities visited out of 32. Fiona, I'm imagining that with some of the communities you're visiting, they're very challenged geographically in terms of being able to access services close to them.
That is a huge issue. I mean, it really stands out in WA. It is an issue in the NT and Queensland as well, but the geography of WA is just incredibly huge, as you know. And, look, it's definitely a huge issue. Legal services and many other services, you know, they just it's a struggle to try to find the money to go to some of these more remote places. So, you know, if you have a visit once a year or even once a month, it's really not enough, because you nearly need to build up relationships for people to be able to approach you with these issues, which is often such a big step. I guess with criminal law, people are pulled into the system more. They're kind of pulled into engaging with lawyers. But with these sorts of issues, if you don't have a service on the ground all the time or at least some effective relationships, it's very difficult. But what we are seeing is that some of the more permanent services that are out on these communities that aren't legal, they might actually be a pivotal point of contact. So people might go in and talk to them, and an issue gets raised, and then if there's a good relationship between that service and a service in, say, Perth, then the links can be made, because people can't be all places all of the time, of course. It's really huge. It is just really huge, some of those issues around geography.
On a personal level, Fiona, has it surprised or shocked you what you've been finding out within the communities in terms of services that could have been accessed that people didn't know about, or discrimination that is being faced on a daily basis that people didn't know there was assistance for? What's shocked you and, I guess, changed you and the way you think during that process?
Yeah, look, it's been really interesting, because as I said, it's been quite a long process, and I've done a lot of the travel. So I've spoken to, I think we'll be speaking close to 700 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people when we finished, just in the community meetings that we have alone, let alone all the organisations that we speak to as well. Yes, it is really shocking, the levels of disadvantage and disenfranchisement, you see. I mean, they're big words, but really it's just the way people are living. Some of the stuff around housing is absolutely appalling. Some of the stories we've heard about the level of the quality of housing that people are living in. And I guess I would definitely say some of the other standout issues would be the concerns people have around kids being taken, and just the the terrible anguish that that causes, and discrimination is probably another standout issue. But you just see that running through everything pretty much, and just, you know, sometimes you can't believe that things are still like that. Some of the more blatant stuff I've actually seen is in WA, in terms of racial discrimination, and you really just can't believe that things are still going on. So in this way, I guess it's no surprise for Aboriginal people because they experience it all the time. But yes, there have been some shocking things and some very sad stories, and you're often just touched by what people go through and the difficulties that they face in trying to deal with it, because really the vast majority of the problems that we're seeing are really just left to snowball into something much worse than they originally started, as people just really generally don't have much of an idea about where to go or what to do.
All right, well, you're approaching the finish line, got about 6 months more to go, visiting Roebourne and Narrogin in Western Australia during September. What happens at the end of the next 6 months in terms of the research? What's going to happen with it?
That's a really good question. It all comes down to funding for us as well. But what we would hope to see is that it's picked up in such a way that perhaps there's a bit more of a noise made about some of these issues, and particularly around cuts to Aboriginal legal service funding in particular, because I think they still are the front line in terms of dealing with these problems, or seen as such for many people in Aboriginal communities. So I think something really needs to be done, because when we commenced this project, there were already issues of resourcing, and I think they're just getting worse and worse. So it would ideally something would be done to bring it to the attention of politicians to a greater extent, and so that the situation can be addressed. I think we're about to launch our Queensland report in Brisbane in probably about just after we go to Narrogin and Roebourne, and we're hoping that we might get a bit of media about that. But I think that is the key, to just make a bit more noise about it.
All right. Look, thank you for chatting with us on Law Matters. And as I say, this program goes out on Noongar Radio in Perth, but is also broadcast through the National Indigenous Radio Service. If anyone would like to find out more information about the Indigenous Legal Needs Project that you've been working on, what's the best contact for them to do that?
Look, as we've said, I'm based at James Cook University in Cairns. I don't know how many of your listeners are online, but we certainly are. We are sitting there on the internet as the Indigenous Legal Needs Project, and so that might be a good first port of call. I'm happy to give a work number out if that seems appropriate as well.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so it's 07-4042-1886, 07-4042-1886, and I'd be happy to hear from anyone who had any queries about it at all.
All right. Well, look, we look forward to you arriving back in Western Australia, and we'll remind our listeners in the coming weeks about the dates and venues for the two visits for Narrogin and Roebourne, the last of your communities out of 32. An incredible feat to have spoken with over 700 people in the last couple of years, and I'm sure that research is going to be very valuable in terms of looking at service delivery, where it's succeeding, where it's failing, and a whole lot more. Hey.
Thanks, Jodie. Yeah, look, it's just been a great opportunity to hear directly from people in community. I think that's been really important, to have their voices heard, and, you know, some of the terrible stuff going down really needs to be documented. So we hope that it will serve some good purpose.
Fiona Allison joining us, the Senior Research Officer from the Cairns Institute, chatting about the Indigenous Legal Needs Project. Jump on their website and check it out. And as mentioned, we'll keep you up to date here on our Law Matters program about those visits happening soon in Western Australia. Just a reminder that coming up this hour, a little bit later, I'll be chatting with Larissa Berendt about a fascinating documentary that will screen tonight on NITV, spotlighting the Bowraville Murders Inquiry. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but over a five-month period in the late 1990s and 1991, three Aboriginal children were murdered on the Bowraville Mission. And there is going to be a documentary screening tonight on NITV that was written, directed and narrated by the case's former lawyer, Larissa Berendt. Fascinating stuff, and going to be followed with a Q&A after as well. So Larissa joins us on the program shortly to let us know more about that. But before that, we're talking all about privacy. It's a pretty important thing that we need to know more about. That is coming up next.
Hey, Mum, can we go to the park and kick the footy?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Go grab your footy and your bikes and we'll head down in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
You don't need expensive gym equipment to get your 30 minutes of exercise every day. It's as easy as going down to the park to kick the footy, walking the dog, walking down to the shops or walking the kids to school.
Come on, Auntie, you ready?
Yeah, let's go, boys. I'll race you there.
This is a community service announcement from Noongar Radio.
Well, a very exciting week this week for the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner because a new series of videos about common privacy issues for individuals is launched. One was launched on Monday of this week. The other is due to be launched tomorrow. And joining us now on Law Matters to let us know more about it is Privacy Commissioner Timothy Pilgrim. Timothy, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great, thanks, Jodie. It's good to be with you.
It's good to talk with you, and it's always very exciting, isn't it, when you're involved in some brand new programs and projects that are all about getting important information out to the community in an interesting and informative way, hey?
Yeah, it certainly is, because this is a really important issue for all of us, because what a lot of people don't realise is that our personal information is not only valuable to us, but it's valuable to organisations who want to use it. And at the end of the day, it's all about those organisations having information that tell them an awful lot about us, and we should all try to keep control about what's happening with that information.
And I imagine that in these days of Facebook and all other social networking media sites, our information is so accessible very easily, but it's an important thing to guard, isn't it, our privacy?
It is, because at the end of the day, a lot of these organisations, be they, you know, federal government organisations or big shops and things, are getting a lot of information about us and they want to use that. And it's important we know what they've got and what they want to do with it.
Let's talk first, Timothy, about the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner. What actually is it and why was it set up?
Well, the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner was set up only 4 years ago. Prior to that, there was always an Office of the Privacy Commissioner, but it was expanded to take in not just privacy, but also freedom of information. That is, people's ability to be able to ask government agencies to see documents and information they hold. So the Office of the Information Commissioner was set up to broaden that role. It, interestingly, is going to change slightly so that from January we'll have another single independent office of the Privacy Commissioner starting on the 1st of January. So the Privacy Office will be working, continuing to focus just on privacy issues.
All right, so tell us about the videos. I mean, one was launched on Monday, the other is due to be launched tomorrow. What are the videos targeting and how can people access them? And of course, a lot of our listeners are in regional and rural parts of Western Australia, so I'm imagining they're able to be downloaded from websites and whatnot.
They certainly are. People can get them from our website, which is www.oaic.gov.au. And they deal with some of the most common questions we get asked. And the first one might seem a bit obvious, but it's basically answering the question, what is privacy? And it goes into talking about what the Federal Privacy Act actually protects. It talks about what sort of organisations we cover and regulate, the main ones being federal government agencies and much of the private sector. And it goes into a bit more detail about some of the issues that privacy covers. But we then wanted to look at a few of the other key questions we get, and we're going to follow up with one that tells people how they can go about making a complaint if they think their privacy's been breached. There's also one to tell people about how they can access their personal information. And this is really important, as I was saying, because a lot of organisations have our personal information, and we often don't know whether that's right or wrong. And if they're making decisions about us, we should really know that they've got the right information. So accessing it is really important. And then we deal with two specific issues in the last two animations we're going to have. And one's a common one that a lot of people ask in regard to security cameras that their neighbours may have, asking about what can you do if your neighbour sets up a camera in their backyard. And the last one that we're putting out in this round of them is also a question about whether real estate agents can come into your place when you're renting and take photos in there and what controls you have around that. So what we're doing is starting off with some broad questions that people ask around what is privacy, and then tackling a couple of the key questions we get asked a lot about.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I imagine that across the country there is the odd neighbourly dispute going on, and I guess that that image of somebody across the road putting up a video camera that shoots straight into your house is pretty alarming, isn't it?
It can be, and the thing about the Federal Privacy Act, though, is it doesn't apply to individuals. That's each of us in our households. So what this particular animation that will be going up deals with there is giving people tips about other means by which they may be able to resolve those issues. But the whole point of putting these particular animations out, this information out, is because we also had some really major changes to the Federal Privacy Act that came into force last March and changed a whole lot of the law and how it works. So we wanted to follow up with those big changes with some new and some good basic information.
I'm speaking with Privacy Commissioner Timothy Pilgrim here on Noongar Radio, the Law Matters program, which comes to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Timothy, I know that you also run an inquiry line, and I'm keen to know the sorts of issues that people would phone in asking about for that inquiry line.
Yeah, we get quite a lot of questions and coming in. We get around 20,000 calls a year with people raising a whole range of issues. One of the topical ones at the moment has been that there's been some major changes to the way people's credit information can be handled. Not a lot of people realise the Privacy Act regulates how organisations can use our personal credit information. That's the information we have to hand over when we want to get a credit card or a loan or open an account at a bank, those sort of things. And there's been some changes to those particular laws, and we're getting a lot of questions coming in because people aren't aware, for example, that they're entitled to get a free copy of their credit report held by credit reporting organisations once a year for free. And it's really important that people keep an eye on that because, again, sometimes there are mistakes made, and if there's a mistake made on your credit file, it may stop you being able to access credit. So we've been getting a lot of questions about people's personal credit information. And also another key area is people wanting to get access to their medical records. They want to see what's in them, and people often aren't aware that they do have a right to ask to see what's in their medical records and also to be able to get a copy of them if they want them. So there are a couple of the key areas that we're seeing coming through in our inquiries line at the moment.
I'm sure that there are a lot of our community members around the country who would welcome the information that you are putting out, because it's all about empowering all Australians, isn't it, in terms of knowing what our rights are, asking questions if we don't feel right about something, and accessing information that relates directly to us.
That's right. And one of the things I like to remind people is at the end of the day, they should always ask why. You should never be too hesitant or worried about asking why an organisation wants to collect your information. Now, organisations have to have a privacy policy, and when they get your personal information, they're required by the Privacy Act to tell you what they're going to do with it. But if you think you haven't been told enough or you don't understand, then just simply ask why they want it and who they're going to hand it to or who else might get to see it. They're really important questions we should all think about.
So we all need to be empowered with more information on how to guard our privacy, know what does go, what doesn't go. You have put out two videos that are launched this week. You must be very pleased with them, and I guess they're going to appeal to wide audiences because they're animations.
Yes, they are, and we think they will be really useful because, as you say, they're animations. They can be watched, and the text will come up, so if people can't hear, for example, then they'll be able to just read. But also, if they can't see the text, then there is audio as well, so you'll be able to hear the information that's coming across. So we think they're really good and accessible.
Fantastic. Look, we appreciate your time on our program today, letting us know all about it. And we'll remind people that these two videos have been launched this week by the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner. One launched on Monday, the other being launched tomorrow. They will be published on their website and their YouTube channel and advertised via their social media channels. But the great news is that all of that work is licensed under Creative Commons copyright. So what that means is you're free to use use them or publish them yourself if you think they would be useful. The website address is www.oaic.gov.au, www.oaic.gov.au. Timothy Pilgrim, thanks so much for your time on Noongar Radio and our Law Matters program. Well done with the videos, and we hope they're an effective tool in getting more information out to the community.
Great, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. That is Privacy Commissioner Timothy Pilgrim joining us here on Law Matters and Revolution here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Jody Hoffman with you this hour. Well, NITV has so many fans and so many viewers, and I did want to let you know about a really important documentary that screens on NITV tonight. Now, I'm not sure how many of you remember going back to 1990 and early 1991, but there was a horrific case where three Aboriginal children were murdered on the Bowraville Mission. And a documentary has been made about it called Innocence Betrayed. The doco was written, directed and narrated by the case's former lawyer, Larissa Berendt. And she joins me on the program now. Larissa, thanks so much for your time on Noongar Radio today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, look, this case, I mean, for anyone who heard about it, it was absolutely heartbreaking. And we're going back over 20 years. Tell me when you first heard about this, the Bowraville murders.
I was aware of it, as I think a lot of Aboriginal people were when it first happened. Three children disappearing and being murdered on an Aboriginal mission. You know, it was pretty shocking. I was a law student at the time, and, you know, it just seemed to me that this was the exact sort of case of where you'd expect a community to be able to get justice for its most innocent people. And, you know, it's 25 years later, almost 25 years later, and it's still elusive.
Where is Bowraville?
So Bowraville is in New South Wales on the coast, so it's near Kempsey. It's about 5.5 hours north of Sydney by car, so it's up near Kempsey. It's a little bit inland, so it's a bit isolated, but it sort of featured heavily in the Freedom Rides about 50 years ago because it really was one of those small country towns that was incredibly segregated. You know, the swimming pool was segregated, the schools were segregated, and Bowraville was quite notorious because it had a cinema where there was a separate section for whites and a separate section for Aboriginal people, and the whites had all the comfy seats and the Aboriginal people had these kind of planks to sit on. So, you know, it had a history of that kind of racial tension, and in some ways that came into play once children went missing because the parents knew immediately that something was wrong. You know, the parents who loved their children and knew their behaviours, and they knew immediately when something was wrong. And they went to the police, and the police treated it as though the kids had run away. It was two 16-year-olds and a 4-year-old. And on the record, the police said, oh, well, the kids have gone walkabout. And the community were just outraged by the lack of interest. And it really wasn't until Quentin's body was found a couple of weeks after he was murdered, he was the third child, that they started to take the matter seriously. But of course, by that time, Colleen had gone missing, the 16-year-old girl, Evelyn, the 4-year-old girl, and, you know, important evidence was lost and important leads weren't followed up, and that has haunted the case ever since.
Oh, I can't imagine how it must have been for the family over those years and the anguish that it must have caused them. And for you, Larissa, you said you were a law student at that time, but you went on to become much more involved in this case, didn't you?
Yes, I didn't get involved until I was invited in by the community, and I was approached by Colleen's family first. They were keen to try and get the case back into court. And, you know, I was obviously absolutely delighted. It's been the huge passion of my legal career to work on this case because it meant so much to me before I even got involved as an Aboriginal person. And I was obviously incredibly keen to do whatever we could. And then I started working with Clinton's father and Evelyn's mother. So, and it was their idea to make the film. They had thought that it might get the right attention. So, you know, I didn't wake up one morning and think, oh, I'll make a film about Barrowville. I had gone in and, I guess, kind of worked with the community, and then it was their decision to try and make a film. So we thought we'd do that, and they didn't rest. They've also, in the meantime, since the film's come out, and we'll discuss this in the question and answer section after the film screens, that, you know, that they were successful in getting a parliamentary inquiry into looking at why their cases haven't gone back. Well, the parliamentary inquiry was supposed to just look at the impact on the community, but I think they've made the case that they won't get justice until someone is put behind bars for these murders. And I think my sense of working very closely with the community and the committee through this inquiry process is that this committee understands that something needs to happen in terms of getting the cases back to court. So we'll be interested to see. But in some ways, the families were, you know, their timing with the documentary is great, because, of course, it's so close to when the inquiry will produce its findings.
I'm talking with Larissa Berendt, who is the writer, director and narrator of Innocence Betrayed, which screens on NITV tonight and focuses on the murders at the Bowerville Mission. Larissa, you must have felt in a very privileged position to have been invited in by the community and the family for something that was so important, and I'm imagining that their strength and resilience was absolutely incredible throughout that process.
Yes, look, first of all, it was absolutely, and to be trusted not just for, you know, to do legal work to support them around the case, but to actually get to tell their story was an incredible privilege. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I think one of the things about the documentary that's really clear, and from working with the families, is that for all of the heartache and the grief and the anger and the frustration that they feel, they are enormously resilient and so determined. I think their struggle and their fight from a community that has nothing, you know, they're a poor community, they're given very few resources. So, you know, they have been one of the most sort of inspirational things I've seen in my whole legal career, the tenacity of them. And I think that's extraordinary. I mean, one part of the story that's really important to know is that there have been two attempts to convict a suspect in this case, and because of the lack of diligence in the original investigation, those prosecutions weren't successful. And people were telling them that's the end of it. There's a double jeopardy law, and you cannot do anything now. You know, you'll just have to move on. And they didn't. They actually went to the New South Wales Parliament and they changed the law to overturn the double jeopardy rule, so that now there's an avenue for them to bring these cases back to court. And when the Parliament, New South Wales Parliament, debated these new laws, they mentioned specifically, they said, look, it's important that we change these laws so that the Barrowville case can get back into court. That's the whole reason for changing these laws. And you would think at that stage, as the families did, that, okay, well, we've won this huge legal fight, so now when's the court date? And the new laws required the State Attorney General to make a recommendation to the Court of Criminal Appeal for the cases to go further. And they went twice to two different attorneys, and both times they were told no. They were told, well, you don't meet the test because evidence has to be fresh and compelling. And although all the evidence that has been subsequently found in this case is compelling, it was available at the time the police originally investigated it, and maybe they didn't pursue it, but it's not fresh. And to be ruled out on such a silly technicality is really hard to explain to the families of murder victims, whatever their background. So, you know, they have been fighting to try and get this case back into court. Now it's much more a political battle rather than a legal battle for them. Because in 1997 there was a huge reinvestigation, and Gary Jubelin, who's featured in the film, came in, and he completely changed the relationship with the community. Remember how we were talking at the beginning that you have these racial tensions and the police and the community don't trust each other?
And Heath was a detective inspector, hey?
Yeah, he was a detective inspector. He's had over 20 years homicide experience. And he said when he first got the case, everyone was telling him, oh, you know, there's a lot of racism that's preventing this case from going forward. And he said, I didn't believe it. But actually, I've come to realise that that really was the case. And if these were three white kids, this case would be solved by now. But Jubelin went back through that original police investigation and found additional evidence. And because he built a trust up with the community, there was more evidence he got out, that eyewitness accounts that the previous police investigation didn't get out. So he came in and did that. So he's standing alongside the community now saying there is enough. In his experience as a detective inspector of over 20 years, one of the best in New South Wales, there is enough evidence to take this case forward. And you compare that to other cases where they've prosecuted cases where there's been nobody, and it's all circumstantial, and it's run really hard, and these families don't get that same chance. I can't explain it to them because it doesn't seem fair. So, you know, I think between the documentary and the new inquiry, I hope for them that finally that final hurdle of getting back into court can be overcome.
Oh, look, we all do. Look, it's an unsolved case that should have been solved when it happened. And I think the comments that you said, that Detective Inspector Gary Jubelin said that this wouldn't have happened if it was three white kids. And that's just a blatant fact, isn't it? It's just absolutely heartbreaking, the tragedy that these families have faced in that time. And I take my hat off to them that they've stayed so staunch and so strong to get answers in such an important long fight for justice. We're just about out of time, Larissa, but I do want to give people the detail. The documentary screens tonight on NITV, 6th of August, Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. It's hosted by Malandiri McCarthy and features a question and answer with yourself, Larissa Berendt, Detective Inspector Gary Jubelin, and a family member's on as well.
Yes, Leonie Giroux has been the absolute leader in the campaign. She was Clinton's sister-in-law, and she is an amazing woman. And, you know, I'm sure people, once they see all the evidence we put forward in the documentary, will be really keen to support the campaign.
And, of course, if you don't see the documentary on NITV tonight, it will be going up onto their website, so you can screen it any time thereafter. Larissa Berendt, well done. An emotion, but, let's hope that the family get their day in court.
They certainly deserve it. Thank you.
Larissa Berendt is the writer and director and narrator of that documentary called Innocence Betrayed.